Good morning. Happy Sabbath. Sometimes I wonder when I'm going to give a message, if that's a message that the Lord really wants me to give. Well, a personal testimony here this morning. I was busy this week preparing this message, and I did not look at the Sabbath school lesson. I didn't even open the book, which is really unusual for me because I normally study the lesson almost every time I do. I didn't this week, and so I get here to church and they were studying Matthew chapter 5, and I was really surprised, the Sermon on the Mount, because that's what this message is about today. So I think the Lord has something here for us. I'm going to talk about the mercy aspect of it. And when Tom first turned the computer on there a few minutes ago, I saw a few smiles out there. I assume that everyone knows who this fella is. No? Alphonse Capone, Al Capone, probably synonymous with the number one gangster in America, American history. In Chicago, and he was never arrested for it, but it was the St. Valentine's Day massacre was attributed to him, even though he was in Florida when it happened, when his people tried to kill Bugs Moran up on Clark Street in Chicago. There's another shot. Look at the tombstone there. It's the title of our message today. My Jesus, mercy. I'm assuming that the relatives put that on there. I don't know that Al Capone asked for mercy himself. If your relatives ask for mercy for you after you're dead and gone to the grave and put it on your tombstone, I'm not exactly sure how effective that is. It's better if we ask for mercy ourselves. But nevertheless, that's the title of this message. And we want to look at through Matthew 5. This is the last slide that has pictures. The rest is the scriptures. So we'll go through those. But you can see on there, it says, My Jesus, mercy. That's his gravestone in Chicago. This is Matthew 1, and we'll start there and go down through these. And seeing the multitudes, actually before we start, let me read here the first two verses of Matthew 5 so we know what's going on. And seeing the multitudes, he went up on the mountain. And when he was seated, his disciples came to him. I guess they're on the screen. And then he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. I didn't realize they were part of the slides. So this is the setting. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. There are nine Beatitudes in Matthew 5, and the centerpiece, the shining centerpiece, is blessed are the merciful. They shall obtain mercy. Right in the middle of the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount is this one. There's nine of them. Right in the middle, number 5 is that one. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Now, mercy is something I think we all would like to have. I don't think there's anybody here that would not want to have mercy from God. Just to share with you, God's deepest instinct is mercy. It's not the way Satan portrays him. Praying for mercy is not trying to overcome God's reluctance. Have you ever heard that? Praying for mercy is not trying to overcome God's reluctance to give you mercy. It's laying hold of his highest willingness. When you pray for mercy, you're laying hold of God's highest willingness. Mercy is what we don't deserve, but it's desperately what I need. So how do we get it? Mercy is a defining paradigm for the rest of Matthew 5, as these seven real-life clips reveal. We're going to go on down through Matthew 5 here. Skip a few verses, but there's Matthew 5:21. You've heard it that it was said to those of old, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment." Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Jesus' radical brand of mercy declares that the innocent be the initiator of reconciliation. In other words, someone who is angry with you, maybe you didn't even do anything with them, do anything to cause it. Jesus wants you to be the instigator, take the initiative, and go and straighten this out. I think it was said today in the Sabbath school class about the issues that happen on our roadways. I think there was some man that was run over here in central Indiana this week because there was a road rage incident, and one person got out of their car and the other guy took a truck and ran over him. But God wants us to be, even if we're the ones that's wrongly, falsely, somebody's mad at us, he wants us to be the one to go to them. Be the initiator of reconciliation. That's radical. It goes against our way of thinking. A lot of this is radical. It goes against the way we think. You have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Lust is the opposite of mercy, for mercy lives to preserve, but lust lives to consume. Lust against a woman, I think, is robbing a woman of her dignity, and she doesn't know she's even been robbed. And ladies, it could be the same for you, too. It's not just a man thing. It's both. You rob the person of their dignity. It can bring about a life of heartache, addiction to pornography on the internet. Who knows how rampant that is? It enslaves and it traps. It's not the way to go. It consumes. It will consume your life and destroy. Matthew 29. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causeth you to sin, cut it off, cast it from you, for it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. Now, this isn't literal, but it means remove the things from your eyes that's causing the problem. You know, God, I don't think God is actually asking us to gouge our eyes out, because sins are sins of the heart, aren't they? Your eyes are just a mechanism. Your hands are just a mechanism to execute the desires of the heart. So you want to remove the things that's causing your issues with sin. Matthew 5:31. Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Adultery, it's a tough thing. And like I said, this goes against the way that we like to handle things. The way God would look at it is adultery would be the grounds for forgiveness. God forgives us. We should have that forgiveness in our heart. That being said, it's much easier said than done, because adultery will absolutely destroy a marriage, and it destroys the love that was once there. And it's really hard to get that back. Once that betrayal, that intimacy, the betrayal has happened, it's really tough to get it back. But God doesn't want to see our marriages wrecked. And obviously he doesn't want us in an abusive situation. But if we would look at it as adultery should be the grounds for forgiveness. And like I said, I know that's hard, and this is radical, but this is the mercy that God has. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, for neither by heaven, for it is God's throne. But let your yes be yes, and your no be no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. In other words, we let our mouth run too far. We don't stop at yes and no. We give them a piece of our mind. We want them to know that they're wrong and we're right. And I'm going to make you understand it, whether you want to understand it or not. So we let our mouths run, and when the words come out of our mouths, you can't take them back. So you go too far. And then there's hurt. And then there's this wide wound that has to be healed. But God tells us ahead of time, be merciful, and don't let your mouth run ahead of your good common sense. And I've said it, this is tough stuff to try to do. I mean, this is easy. All this stuff is easier said than done. But this is God's ideal for us. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Matthew 5:38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him also have your cloak. Let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. This is the community of extra milers, the other cheekers. Turn the other cheek. When Jesus was brought before the Sanhedrin and he was slapped, he was spitting in his face. Now, I've never had anybody spit in my face, but I could just see that if that happened, I could instantly see a flash of red come. I'm sure I would get red. I'm pale. But that's not the way we're to react. Jesus didn't react that way. He prayed for those. This is the mercy that God has. This is the mercy that we should be willing to extend to others. Like I said, this is radical stuff. The community of the extra milers, the other cheekers, that is the community of mercy. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemies. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. And that's what Jesus did. He prayed for those at the cross. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. That's hard. And the problems with society today, the violence that is out there in this world, and as soon as you hit the road, you're there. It takes one wrong anything, or maybe nothing, maybe just perceived on someone's part that you have offended them, and they'll follow you in their car and want to confront you, want to fight, want to do whatever. We live in a very intolerant society. We live in a society that has no mercy. We want to exact justice ourselves. Four proactive verbs. Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who spitefully use you. Matthew 5:45, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. God sends the rain to people that don't deserve rain. He sends them to evil people. Just because somebody doesn't like God, or you're an atheist, and maybe you absolutely just hate God and shake your fist at heaven and say, I hate you, if you even exist, God still lets it rain. He lets the sun shine on that person. He has extended mercy to this world. The further we get closer to the second coming, God's mercy becomes more apparent, because the worse we get, it seems like the more mercy he's extending. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? You greet and bow, you know, and all this ceremonial stuff. Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Well, there you go. There's the caboose that drives the train. That therefore, we talked about it in Sabbath school class. I've told you all this. Now, in conclusion, be perfect as your Father in heaven. You had better be perfect. Struggle to be perfect, even if it kills you. If you want to be like God, be perfect. That definitely seems unattainable. But that's not what that means. This is in conclusion. This is the therefore. I've told you all this stuff. We've gone through it. I want you to be perfect. This is Luke's translation of this. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. If you want to be like God, be merciful. If you want to be perfect, be merciful. So if you really want to be perfect like God, be merciful like God. When I first read this, and I saw, therefore, be perfect, it just sends shivers down my spine, because I'm a long way from perfect. Psalms 103:8, his message is, God is sheer mercy and sheer grace. Be perfect like your Father in heaven, Matthew 5:48, simply means be merciful like your Father in heaven. And we have learned how to be merciful. Not easy, but we know what we should do. This is from the Mount of Blessings. Thoughts from the Mount of Blessings. God is himself the source of all mercy. His name is merciful and gracious. He does not treat us according to our desert, according to how we should be. He does not ask if we are worthy of his love, but he pours upon us the riches of his love to make us worthy. He is not vindictive. He seeks not to punish, but to redeem. Even the severity which he manifests through his providences is manifested for the salvation of the wayward. He yearns with intense desire to relieve the woes of men and to apply the balsam to their wounds. It is true that God will by no means clear the guilty, but he would take away the guilt. And how does he do that? He does it with the cross of Calvary. He takes our guilt away from us on the cross of Calvary. God, in his mercy, gave us the cross of Calvary. And out of our love and appreciation, we should love God and we should love our fellow man, because he not only died for you, he died for your enemy, or died for someone who maybe doesn't like you. I want to share a story here. How many of this is from the Testimonies, Volume 1. How many of you have ever heard of the Hannah Moore, the story about Hannah Moore? You've heard of it, Tom? I want to share this with you. A few of you have. This is a case of Hannah Moore. Sister Moore had been at Battle Creek and, not finding employment there, had gone to Leawanaw County to find a home with an old friend who had been a fellow laborer in the missionary fields in Central Africa. Now, this lady had been in Africa for 50-some years. Now, she was aged. She was a missionary, not with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but with another church. And while she was in Africa, she read a book entitled History of the Sabbath by Mr. Andrews, where the university is founded after, Andrews University. The book was entitled History of the Sabbath, and she became convicted that the Sunday was not the right day to worship, and she wanted to change this. Now, this is Mrs. White speaking here. My husband and myself felt grieved that this dear servant of Christ found it necessary to deprive herself of the society of those of like faith, and we decided to send for her to come and find a home. So she had gone to northern Michigan. Now, this is up just south of Traverse City. It's up right on a little peninsula area, this Leawanaw County, and it's surrounded by water. Mrs. White wanted to get her back down to Battle Creek. And you'll see what happened here. This is what Hannah Moore says. I spent all my money coming here, that's going up to northern Michigan, to have a home with Brother Thompson. Now, Brother Thompson was a minister, but not of the Adventist Church. I have been assisting Sister Thompson, that's his wife, in her domestic affairs and sewing at $1.50 per week for 5 days each, 5 days a week, as they do not wish me to work for them on Sunday. I do not work on the Sabbath of the Lord, and the only one the Bible recognizes the Sabbath is talking about. They are not at all anxious to have me leave them, notwithstanding our differences of belief. And he says I may have a home with them, only I must not make my belief prominent among his people. She feels at this time that she needs $10 to get back down, at least get to Greenville in Michigan. That with a little that I have earned might be sufficient, but now I will wait for you to write me. She asked Mrs. White if they could send her $10 to move. And Mrs. White was going to do that. To do what you think's best about forwarding the money. In the spring, I would have enough to go myself, and I think I should like to do so. So she doesn't know that she can have the money right now to get down there, but come spring, she'll have saved enough and can make it back down to Battle Creek. Now, Ellen White writing. Upon receiving this letter, we decided to send. Now, this is in 18. By the way, this was in 1867. Just so you have a timing. Upon receiving this letter, we decided to send the sum of money to Sister Moore as soon as we could find time. But before we found the spare moment, we decided to go to Maine and return in a few weeks, when we could send for her before navigation should close, before the Great Lakes froze and the snow came and she couldn't get down there. And when we decided to stay and labor in Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont and New York, we wrote to a brother in this country, that's back in Michigan, to see lending the brethren in this vicinity and consult with them concerning sending for Sister Moore and making her a home until we should return. So she didn't get the money sent to her. They got out east. She's trying to make arrangements now to get her back down before winter sets in. But the matter was neglected until navigation closed, and we returned and found that no one had taken an interest to help Sister Moore in this vicinity, where she could come to us when we should reach our home. We felt grieved and distressed at the meeting in Orleans the second Sabbath after we came home. My husband introduced her case to the brethren. Now, this is just a brief report that James White gave to the church there. At this meeting, we introduced the case of Sister Hannah Moore, now soldiering in northwestern Michigan, with friends who do not observe the Bible Sabbath. We stated that this servant of Christ embraced the Sabbath while performing missionary labor in Central Africa. When this was known, her services in that direction were no longer wanted. So when they found out that when she accepted the Bible Sabbath, they fired her. They got rid of her after all these years in Africa. Just dumped her out. And she returned to America to seek a home and employment with those of like faith. She came to Battle Creek to be with her fellow believers. We judge from her present location that in this she has been disappointed. Boy, that's an understatement. No one in particular may be worthy of blame in her case, but it appears to us that there is either a lack of suitable provisions connected with our system of organization for the encouragement of such persons to assist to a field of useful labor, or that those brethren and sisters who have had the pleasure of seeing Sister Moore have not done their duty. Well, that put this situation in a very mild. He didn't really bring the hammer down on these people for not doing what a Christian should do. Now, this is what Mrs. White says. From what we have since learned of the cold, indifferent treatment which Sister Moore met at Battle Creek, it was evident that in the stating, now this is, she's talking about James White here, in his stating that no one in particular was worthy of censure, in her case, my husband took altogether too charitable a view in the matter. When all the facts are known, no Christian but could blame all members of that church who knew of her circumstance and did not individually interest themselves in her behalf. Where is the mercy? So, immediately after they returned from the East, my husband, learning that nothing had been done as we had requested, which she could come to us, to which she responded the following. This is Hannah Moore now. This is dated February 20th, 1868. So it's winter time now, and she can't get back down to Battle Creek. My dear brother White, your letter of February 3rd, notice how long it takes to get anything, is received. It found me in poor health, not being accustomed to the cold northern winters. The snow there is 3 or 4 feet deep on a level. Our mail is brought to us on snowshoes. And she's coming from Africa, and she's old. It does not seem possible for me to get to you till spring opens. The roads are bad enough without snow. They tell me my best way is to wait till navigation opens, then go to Milwaukee and hence to Grand Haven and take the railroad to a point nearest your place. I had hoped to get among our dear people last fall, but was not permitted the privilege. She still loves them. And they did nothing. They did nothing to help this lady. She calls them our dear people. Now, this distance, I checked it on the map, is 253 miles. And today, it's a four-hour drive. But back then, in 1868, it was halfway around the world. I mean, it was a long journey, especially in Michigan's winter. She goes on to say, I think my health has suffered from keeping the Sabbath alone in my chamber in the cold. I did not think I could keep it where all manner of work and worldly conversation was the order of the day, as with Sunday keepers. So she's up in an attic. This is where they've got her. They got her room up in the attic. They've got a leaky chimney, and it's not heated properly, if barely at all. But this was her room. And so she spends Sabbath up there alone, up in this cold room, because the man of the house, who's a pastor, doesn't want her down there, showing him how to live, how to keep Sabbath. And she doesn't want to be down there because she knows it's a problem. And she sees what they're doing on the Sabbath. On their Sunday, they're just living any old way. I think it most laborious working day for those who keep the first day. Indeed, it does not seem to me that the best of Sunday keepers observe any day as they should. Oh, how I long to be again with Sabbath keepers. Isn't that amazing? I have had difficulty in breathing so that I have not been able to sleep for more than a week, occasioned, I suppose, by the stovepipes parting and completely filling my room with smoke and gas at bedtime, and my sleeping there without proper ventilation. I did not, at the time, suppose smoke was so unwholesome, nor consider the impure gas which generated from the wood and the coal that was mingled with it. I awoke with such a sense of suffocation I could not breathe lying down, and spent the remainder of the night sitting up. I never before knew the dreadful feeling of the stifling sensation. I began to fear that I should never sleep again. I therefore resigned myself into the hands of God for life or death, entreating him to spare me if he had any further need of me in his vineyard. I'm not going to read all this, but let me finish by what Mrs. White says to bring this to a conclusion. She being dead yet speaketh. She died. She didn't make it back down to Battle Creek. She died that winter up there in that cold attic in northern Michigan. After a lifetime of service to God in Central Africa, she becomes convicted of the Sabbath, wants to come back to America and be with Sabbath keepers, and they did nothing to help her. Where's the mercy? This is what Mrs. White said. She being dead yet speaketh. Her letters, which I have given, will be read with deep interest by those who have read her obituary in a recent number of the Review. She might have been a blessing to any Sabbath-keeping family who could appreciate her worth, but she sleeps. Our brethren at Battle Creek and in this vicinity could have made more than a welcome home for Jesus in the person of this godly woman. But the opportunity is past. It was not convenient. They were not acquainted with her. She was advanced in years and might be a burden. Feeling of this kind barred her from the homes of professed friends of Jesus, who are looking for his near advent, and drove her away from those she loved, to those who opposed her faith, to northern Michigan in the cold of winter to be chilled to death. She died a martyr to the selfishness and covetousness of professed commandment keepers. God help us. I hope that we would never allow that to happen here, but it happened there. It could happen. I wanted to share that letter with you because professed commandment keepers showed this lady no mercy, no love. So if you want mercy and judgment, you need to be merciful to those here on earth that you come in contact with. Again, like I said, some of this stuff's hard. It goes against our fallen nature. But God loves them. He loves you. That's what we need to do. We need to be merciful.